It's episode 16 of Chefs on the Pass, the Craft Guild of Chefs official podcast. Let's go! And I was thrilled to get some time with the awesome Ben Murphy, previous National Chef of the Year winner, author, and now the driving force behind the upcoming 74 Charlotte Street by Ben Murphy. We chat about sponge-like learning in some of the world's toughest kitchens, why playfulness only works when flavour comes first, and what it's really like to open your first restaurant at the age of 24. Ben is one of the most exciting chefs of our time, and there will be lessons for you here at whatever stage you're at in your career, as he drops inspiration and honesty throughout this conversation. So make sure you hit that subscribe button and come right on in. Hello and welcome to Chefs on the Pass, the Craft Guild of Chefs official podcast, hosted as ever by me, Phil Street. Now, I'm just going to get stuck into this today because we've got an absolute stellar guest with us and we've got a lot to get through. So I'm just going to get stuck in and say welcome to the show, Ben Murphy.
Hi, Phil. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Thank you. Very, very good.
Good, good, good. I feel like you and I have been threatening to do a podcast chat for about 3 years.
yeah, long time overdue.
Yeah, absolutely. No, but it's really, really wonderful that it's like we were obviously meant to do it now. That's the thing, because you've got obviously what looks on the surface are quite an exciting time ahead for you, which we'll obviously get into in due course in talking about that. But yeah, well, actually, just tell the world what it is that you're about to get into.
So we announced last week that we're opening 74 Charlotte Street by Ben Murphy. End of October, so 31st of October, we go live to the public. A project I've been working on for a little while now with the WSH Restaurant Group. And yeah, so obviously, for people that aren't aware, that location was Monica Galetti's old place.
Yeah.
It's been closed for over a year. And yeah, we're making something really special there. I can't really give too much away because obviously I want people to commute and come and see what we're doing. But yeah, the word that I'm, the emphasis of the restaurant I'm putting on is accessible. I think the fine dining scene isn't where it used to be. I think fine dining as a word can come across quite intimidating. So having a good lunch menu, again, two courses, £35, a good a la carte menu on offer. We've got an ice cream trolley, beer and milk. So we're gonna have quite a lot of fun, honestly.
That's been one of your things, though, I think. I mean, most of the stuff that I've read about you, our experience of, we've known each other now probably for a couple of years, on and off the odd interview here, for things here and there, but the one thing that comes across is the word playfulness, and the fact that you're obviously, we'll get into your background in a second, and your background is one of quality and precision, but it doesn't mean that you can't play with that, right?
Yeah, I think it's finding the fine line of doing too much, which I've done before but worked, and then doing too much that it distracts from the food itself. So I think having that balance of knowing personally that a lot of guests eat with their eyes, to the extent of 9 times out of 10, a guest would normally take their phone out before they take a picture of my food, because the powers of social media now, especially, but then also the forefront being the flavor that is what people remember, as well as their whole package of their service, the experience, etc. So I think playfulness is one thing, but the direction of what I'm doing it in now is more based on the presentation of the food. But the ultimate of the flavour is priority.
Yeah. You are properly speaking my language. I am definitely an eat with eyes first kind of a guy. And I've always, I was lucky enough to experience your food at Launceston Place. And every single plate that comes out is just, it's a work of art. You're kind of straddling that line between wanting to absolutely destroy it. But, that's why people want to take a picture of it, right? So you can keep that picture forever.
Yeah, that's just it. I think it's important, but at the same time, I don't want to be classed as that chef who just does all these gimmicks and playfulness, and because the foundation of the cookery is the philosophy of what I've learned from working at in the locations I have, which is the foundation and the base of what I guess like the DNA of what I do now. Like learning how to make a sauce properly from when I still do what I did now when I was at Kaufman's, and that's something that's always stuck with me, and I would never want to change that. But I want to make sure that that is noticeable within the food that gets presented at the forefront of flavor.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's a nice segue, actually. Let's take us back to the very beginning. And how did you get into chefing in the first place? What was the driver behind that?
So I did 3 years at Westminster Kingsway College. I came out of secondary school. Didn't really do that well at secondary school, if I'm honest. But I was actually doing food technology at secondary school, and it was something that kind of really appealed to me based on it was a bit more practical than sitting in an RE lesson or a maths lesson and just reading out of a book, it was a bit more hands-on. I kind of got a little bit of a buzz for it, but then I didn't really know what to do coming out of school. Going into Westminster College, I thought, okay, it was the only subject I really participated, should we say, at secondary school, so let's see if I can make something of nothing. I remember going into Westminster College and doing an induction and being given four different types of jellies, all different colours, all different flavours, and I got all of them completely wrong. I didn't know what garlic tasted like. I had no idea. Yeah, it was the basic things that I look at now, I think, how would I not have known that? But obviously, I think, grateful for mum always putting food on the table, but I've never had that like family figure to say, oh yeah, my dad was a chef, or, you know, like most people do. But again, I was always fed. My nan loved baking, but at the same time, like, yeah, it was very different, very a bit random. Dad's a plumber, mum works in Waitrose, and forever grateful for it, of the upbringing I've had. But Westminster King's College gave me a platform of learning the basics, learning how to cook pasta first year, learning how to hold a knife properly. And that's kind of where it stemmed from. So I did 3 years and I graduated there, because they basically treat it like a uni. Like, you wear the hat, the gown, and you graduate as long as you get your pass rates. And the practical was something I really enjoyed the most there. I built some really good connections. One guy in particular, Norman Fu, who I'm really still close with now. We go out to eat every 3 months and we just talk about food. He's still part of a mentor to me, if I'm honest. I bounce ideas off him. And then, yeah, going into Coffman's was a bit random. So there was a post up on the college wall saying that this guy was opening a restaurant at the Barclay Hotel.
This guy that you've probably never heard of at that time.
Never heard of this guy. Didn't know anything about him. Had no idea. I didn't even do any research, but I knew it was like third year was finishing, and like, I knew I needed to get into the industry, get in a job. I did work experience at the library, which was good, but tough at the time. This is going back ages, 2011, maybe? No, earlier, 2009. So different mentality of the library at that time. I just remember the whole team there being all Australian. but yeah, really good learning curve for sure. And yeah, then I had an interview at Kaufman's. This big guy just walked into the office while I was sitting with, I think it was his PA at the time. Or no, it was the HR of the Barclay Hotel, actually. And this giant guy just walked in. We had brief conversation. I said, I've heard good things. I think I was lying because I didn't really hear. And then obviously, yeah, then I started to do my research. I think that's when it kicked in. I was like, this guy's real. He's a big one. He's a big guy.
Big in stature and reputation.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think, especially for chefs now, like you never really know. Coming out of college, like they say, I've always been advised, and I kind of always give the advice of go work for someone that you want to learn from, who you think you can stay with long term. But at that time, I didn't really, because I had no one above me to give me that direction, apart from like a few mentors. I didn't really know what his food was about, because obviously I did the research. I knew he had a three Michelin star restaurant, but obviously Kaufman's at the Barclay was more of a brasserie, but the mentality kitchen of the kitchen was a three star. So it was a bit weird, like getting hit with a bit of both, like being really focused and working in that three Michelin star environment, to then just cooking and making pig trotters daily to a braised beef cheek with like the perfect mashed potato, which is like simple and refined, but what people wanted to eat. So there was two different ways of it. So yeah, Coffman's was good. I did 4.5 years there. And to be fair, like part of the journey was always stuck with going back there as a part-timer. So I'll be working at the Greenhouse, the two-star where Arnaud Bion was originally, for 10 months. But then because I get 3 days off a week there, two of the days I'll go back to Coffman's just to support and help out. And I guess kind of just earn a bit more cash, if I'm honest with you.
That's really interesting, actually, as well, because, like, you know, we all talk about the fact that it can be an intense job, right? There's no question about it. So at this point in your life, were you that line that you gave Kaufman at the beginning about that you just want to learn? Were you still in this mode of, I just want to absorb as much as I can in every kind of moment that I have?
100%. Like, it's just true what they say, like, you're basically a sponge and you need to absorb everything. Only realizing that this now, and I can say it now, because then eventually, like, you get to a level where you get your identity and you find that your kind of philosophy of food, of what you showcase and what you love to cook and what people love you for. And obviously, yeah, like having my book out and the restaurant opening, like people will know that, like, that eggs and soldiers dish that they had previously, they'll be able to pick that that's mine out of like 10 dishes, for example, or that's something I kind of like I've done before, and or the lemon, that's very Ben Murphy, or do you know what I mean? So I think being in a position where learning from as many chefs as possible to be a sponge, to absorb, to then get fulfillment on as much knowledge as possible, to then be able to give back, for me is like it's been the most important thing of all.
If
I'm honest.
Yeah, I've definitely come across as well in the way that you talk about it, that this period of your life, which is, you know, in chef terms, is your formative years, right? I mean, this could determine a lot of your direction in the sense of, I love what you kind of highlighted around the fact that, you know, your advice to people coming out of college now is to find that place that you can stay with and learn for a period of time, not just take 6 months here and 6 months there and all of that, but actually build some stability around your knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, and certainly from the outside looking in, seems to have served you quite well given to where you've gotten to now.
Yeah, so Coffman's was great. I really loved it. I started on pastry. That mentality of that freestyle chef was like, there was 25 of us in the kitchen. It was crazy. Not many pastry chefs were there. There was only like four. So I decided to be the commie that went on pastry. I did a year on pastry to start, just to be able to get more focus on me and support based on learning. Because I knew if I went on like the larder or the veg at the start, I'll just be like a body and it'll be like prepping broccoli or making mashed potato. And I wouldn't really understand. I thought for me, the timing was important to take that opportunity to learn pastry. And since then, I feel like that was massive. That was something I really needed to do, which I'd highly recommend to anyone else. Also, especially if you just want to be like a kitchen chef, it's good to know the pastry side, because I feel if you are a sous chef anywhere, you need to know everything ultimately if the head chef's off. And that was kind of like the principle that I always stuck with and the side I still believe in. So I did a year on pastry at Kaufman's. I did 4.5 years in total. And then he gave me the ultimatum of three options. So like, I either go work in France, America, or Australia, using his connects of who he knows to get me into the best possible kitchens. Because he knew that like my time there was done and he wanted to support me to go on and continue this journey of learning. So France being the easiest one. Obviously, at the time, the Big Bear, he's French. So he knows
everyone.
Many people. It's only mad. I know you look at it, but when you see like he's taught like Gordon Ramsay, Marcus Waring, all these guys, Marcus Pierre, like it's actually nuts.
It is totally. There's a few of them, right? Yeah, the Roux brothers and Raymond Blanc as well. You know, and like where would our food scene be without these guys?
It's ridiculous. It's actually crazy. Yeah. But yeah, so learning French gastronomy at college was one thing. Then working in French kitchen at the Barclay with him was another. So I felt I had to take the opportunity to go and find out what all this fuss was about the French gastronomy by going working in France. So he drove me to the south of France. His mum at the time was living in Gascony. So we went via the route of Eugénie-le-Bas, where Michel Gérard restaurant was in the south of France. And he basically like dropped me off. He stayed with me for 6 hours of that day, doing all the interview process. Obviously, I know kitchen French, but I don't know enough to get by
right
at the time.
I was going to ask you about that, because that's a big step to take as well, right? I mean,
probably the biggest thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, beyond the cooking element and what you're about to learn, like what it probably taught you about yourself in terms of adaptability and being completely out of your comfort zone, I would imagine.
Yeah, massively. I think going from a free Rosette restaurant, which it was at the Barclay, to then literally a free Michelin star restaurant, kitchen mentality I felt I had because of chef's discipline at the time. So I knew what was right, what was wrong, what to say, when, how to answer, and that be respectful to the hierarchy. But at the same time, not knowing how to pay bills or to get a flat or that language barrier, I didn't have it at all, apart from the swear words that I learned at Coffman's.
Well, that's the first thing you have to learn as a young man, isn't it, really?
Oh, 100%. I think any other language, the first thing they will learn is the English swear words, and then it comes from there. So yeah, I did a year exactly in Michel Gérard's restaurant. I had Claire and Kaufman, they come to visit me after 5-6 months. They like, kind of took me out for the day. We went swimming together. Like it was weird. Again, I'm swimming with Pierre Kaufman and his family. It's just not normal.
I don't think he does that with any, like just anyone. Like there's probably, obviously he saw something in you that maybe you didn't see in yourself at the beginning, but he helped bring out of you because he saw, this is a guy who's got something about him, and I kind of want to play a part in helping him nurture that out.
Yeah, definitely. I think for sure, like he taught me how to be a great cook, but also he taught me how to adapt from a boy to a man. Ultimately, like it's not just about in the kitchen. You learn a lot about yourself and you change. Like I matured quick. Like became more respectful than I was when I was at school, for example. Like I didn't really care. I didn't really know. But also that stems from college as well. That was a massive thing, and I really loved college at the time. But yeah, I think working with Kaufman, everything I did back then still stems within what I do now. Like I said earlier, like the base of a sauce making, the base of veg prep, meat prep, fish prep is obviously that you learn. The more places you go to, the little things you pick up and you learn and adapt to do things quicker. That for sure is definitely installed in what I do now. But at the same time, like if it wasn't for him back then, I would never be where I am right now. Yeah. So yeah, having that connect of being in South France was great. I wanted to do a year. He said do minimum a year. So I stuck by his word.
Was there any point in that where you were thinking, God, I can't do this? I am like,
yeah, probably every other week. Literally. Like there'll be times where I'm on the phone crying to him because I'm getting bollocked for doing something that I didn't even know because of the language barrier. But then at the same time, like I think after 4 or 5 months, I got quite comfortable. I was really in a good place. I actually got promoted before another chef who was there for like 2 years and who was from Belgium. So obviously the French language was a lot easier for him. Mm. But I kind of did notice that, like, I was in a position where you only had to show me once how to do something and I'll be able to reciprocate it.
Right.
You didn't need to show me twice, 3 times, 4 times. So kind of like utilizing that.
Do you think that comes from natural talent? Just you can blow smoke up your own backside if you wish. I would love you to, because I think your talent is insane. Do you think that comes from a natural talent thing, or do you think that was drilled into you by being around somebody like Pierre Kaufman?
To be honest, I think it was probably drilled into me. Right. If I'm honest with you, like, I rarely made a mistake at Kaufman's because I was so aware of all the mistakes that was happening around me at that time. So more, yeah. So being aware of like what was right and what was wrong, if I'm honest with you. So,
yeah.
But then also in my spare time, wanting to do more, wanting to learn, wanting to study, wanting to practice. I think that whole, they say that it's so cliche, like practice makes perfect. But I think I was putting everything into making sure that I was doing things right. So that way I wasn't the person who was going to be on the front line of being bollocked all the time.
Yeah,
like you kind of, especially at Kaufman's, like you didn't want to go in and get bollocks because it ruins your day. You could potentially lose your job because there was no room for error. That was kind of how it was when it started there, and I kind of took that with me in every restaurant I went to. So a year at Michel Guérin in South France was great. I started doing dishes that I wanted to bring to the table as a chef de party. Now I've just been promoted. You kind of had to incorporate some new ideas and go into their gardens to do salads and dishes and. All of a sudden, I think they got the impression that the food that I wanted to do was a bit more fine dining, whereas Michel Guérin was very classical, ingredient-led, incredible. Like in the mornings, 5 a.m., going out to pick all the vegetables, it's on the lunch menu. That sort of thing you can't do here in London.
Yeah.
Again, forever we'll be grateful for that. But at the same time, like I wanted to do a bit more complex. I wanted to do dishes that were a bit more skillful, a bit more technical. A few more things on the plate instead of just the 3 ingredients. So Olivier Brulard was the head chef there at the time, a really supportive chef of me. To be fair, he was fucking mental. He was actually nuts. Like, when he screams, everything goes flying. Like, that kind of old school mentality.
Right.
So, yeah.
You just painted a brilliant picture there. I think anybody who's listening to this would be transported there in that moment.
Honestly, like, I saw some things there that I'm not going to talk about, but it was a learning curve.
Yeah.
Great guy. And for sure, very supportive of where I wanted to go. I missed home a lot. So the next stage for me was Paris. So Paris, I loved Paris. I did a year at Epicure at the Le Bristol Hotel. So going from another 3-star to another one, working for Eric Frechon. So I was one of 2 English chefs in that kitchen. The other one was Daniel Calvert. So he's just got 3-star in Tokyo, Cezanne.
Right.
So we were both commis there, to be fair. And I've just come from South France. He's just come from 7 years at Per Se as a sous chef to both being a commis. It was a bit mad. Obviously, his level is incredible. He's like a book. He knows everything. And I'm still very young, trying to find my way. But I love Paris. I felt more at home because it's very similar to London, just a smaller version. And there was more going on. There was always things to do. There was always a shop open. There was always somewhere I can go get a drink or somewhere where I can go eat. But the food at Epicure was a lot more complex than I expected. But it's something I really loved to be a part of. Parisian mentality, a lot different to the south of France. The language in the south of France was a lot more stronger. there was a lot of egos in this restaurant. But yeah, it was very kind of head down, do another year, and then on we go.
Yeah.
So and that was it. So I literally did another year to the T, no extra day, no day less. And then by using a contact that used to work there as a sous chef was Arnaud Bion. So he was a head chef at the Greenhouse, but he was also the sous chef at Epicure where I was a few years before. So using that kind of like contact and that relationship, I came back to London and I worked at the Greenhouse for a little while.
Right. And it had 2 stars at the time?
2 stars, yeah. Really good restaurant. Really good chef. Really humble chef as well. Like hardly ever shouted, but just knew what was right. Again, still having that mentality of the 3-star of not making a mistake, doing things properly. Yeah, really good guy.
Yeah.
I did 10 months there. I was transparent with him because I went back to Kaufman. I said, look, like, can we go back to the list of the opportunity you gave me, America, Australia? I want to go to America. Anyway, that being said, I didn't really need Kaufman's support at that time. I had a connect with Daniel, who I was working with at Epicure. So he was the one that gave me the introduction to Per Se, which for me, I was very grateful for. I did 6 months there. This is after the Greenhouse. So Greenhouse, I was there for 10 months. But I was transparent with Arno that I wanted to go to America. So he knew I wasn't there long term, but I'll give everything I can until I get like the visa process all sorted, the green card. And then while I was at Per Se, still with Daniel's contacts, I managed to get 6 months out at 11 Madison Park. So I did a year there, which for me was enough.
Wow, yeah.
It's different mentality, different kitchens. Not really my favorite places to work, if I'm honest. I prefer the French kitchens.
Okay. What's the reasoning behind that?
I don't know. I think working in them, it felt like you're in the army.
Right. Like it's kind of you're literally regimented.
Very militant, very like, yes, chef. Everyone's like, says it at the same time, like on cue. It was also like, it felt like an act. It was weird. Like,
right.
I guess people who work there would understand what I mean. It was very, very set, which again is great for consistency, I get. But I felt like there was no like personality with anyone. Everyone was very like, I guess super focused is great, but I don't know. It was weird. I didn't like it, but I did it. And so it was one of them ones and I ticked the box. I wanted to go there. I wanted to learn. I wanted to have it on the CV. It was great.
Mm. But there's also probably there's a lesson here. There's many lessons to be fair, but around like perseverance through toughness, right? Because you've highlighted a few experiences to this point in your journey whereby you've had to dig deep a little bit, either because you're out of your depth, you've just changed cultures, you've just changed languages, you're now in a completely different environment. You've adapting to so many different types of kitchens and the way that they do their work. So you're almost in this constant state of flux as you, I suppose, find yourself and find your groove and find what's important to you. But, you know, there is that. I'm not advocating for bullying and shouting, by the way, not at all. But at the same time, I do see value in perseverance through the tough moments, because I think there's a lot of propensity to just walk away when things get too tough. But actually, if you just, and your case in point, even with your earlier experience, when, you know, every other week you were in contemplation as to whether you want to be there, but somehow you persevered. And then by 4 or 5 months later, those kind of every other week conversations you're having with yourself are a distant memory, because you've now got more resilience, you've now got more strength, more knowledge, and more capability under pressure, I suppose.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I think I can't stress enough to, especially people coming into the industry, or even people like going into like the full-time employment within the industry after leaving college, that every place that you go, no matter whether it's better than the place before or worse, you're always going to learn something. I think that's what people don't realize until they do it. So I think it's taking that leap of, do I go to that place and do I understand? And I think that's what a lot of people forget, which is not a bad thing. But at the same time, I'm just on a podcast here talking to you because that's what I've experienced.
Yeah.
So I'm in a position where I can say that. Whereas obviously for a 21-year-old who is debating whether they're going to come work with me at Charlotte Street or not, because they want to go and work another 1-star, which is already established, great, cool, do it. I'm not saying no to. But at the same time, after a year, normally, especially in 3-stars, I started in March in a 3-star. By the time the 4 seasons have gone, that following March, I'm doing the same shit I was doing the last year.
Yeah.
So then it's time to move on, right? Because otherwise, what are you going to do? You're going to keep doing the same thing, or you're going to learn something new and go and see something else. So for me, it was always a minimum year. And I felt that was a really big factor of what I should have been doing back then. Right now, is that the way forward? Yes, to an extent. But at the same time, the industry is not where it used to be, if I'm honest. I think you need to build relationships with people. This is why, like, I really enjoyed doing the graduate awards as like chair of judges, because I felt I could talk and communicate with the guys on the level, because like my age is not far off from what their experience was.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so I felt they can communicate with me a lot easier than speaking to someone 20 years older than me. Do you know what I mean? So I felt like I could have that kind of relationship. And to be fair, I have a couple of them working with me on this new project. I had three, four of them that was with me at Lawson Place who did really well. But being in a position to give back to then obviously help guide and help advise, I think that's really important right now as well.
Yeah. No doubt. Yeah, I mean, you've kind of also highlighted the importance of connection, right? I mean, all of these people that you're meeting throughout your journey so far, you're building connections that help open doors in places that you probably don't even think about in that moment. But you know, I just a really great lesson for life, I think, generally beyond the kitchen, is that you can never have too many connections.
Yeah, 100%. I always feel like it's important, just to, as weird as it sounds, just to be polite with everyone, anyone that you meet. Like, I don't think, like, I have anyone that I can say a bad word about. Everyone I spoke to has always been nice to me, and I've been nice to them, because you never know the relationships that you would make on that journey. Mm-hmm. Whether that means, Ben, that guy's a nice guy. Like, he seems to be working hard. Like, that kind of word of mouth gets you into certain places where you never think you would be going to. Like, there's no way I could be sitting here saying to you the amount of freestyles I worked in, because I've never worked in a one-star before, but I've done a three-star. So again, Lawson Place, we never got a star, but I know what the mentality of working in a three-star is. I think I knew what a level of a one-star was, but I never achieved anything. So I couldn't tell you. But then our guests will think we're pushing for two because they think we have one, but we haven't got one. So it's just, it's weird. But at the same time, it's probably a good thing, because the restaurant was busy and everyone loved what they did. So I think that was the most important thing.
So I had conversations with Claire Bosie about this, and we were, every single year when you weren't getting a star at Launceston, we were like, what they just like changed the criteria or something like that. I mean, it was but anyway that's probably a debate for another day. We definitely don't want to get on the wrong side of Michelin, and especially with you opening a restaurant soon. But so yeah, you're at the point in your journey, we're at 11 Madison Park. How did it progress from there?
So yeah, I wanted to do 6 months. I did that in person in 11 Madison Park, which was fine. But then I felt I was in a good position to come back and do something in London. Relationships that I built up by working abroad and meeting new people, I got the opportunity to open my own restaurant at age 24, which I felt my CV was great, which, yeah, obviously it showed, it was good. Did I have enough experience as a head chef at 24 after leaving as a sous? No. Did I know how to manage a business? I had no idea. And I opened a restaurant called The Woodford, which did really well for the first 10 months. We got 5 stars from A.A. Gill before he passed. We won the Even Standard Restaurant of the Year Award. Big fans of Faye Mashler. Like, I really appreciated her support that she gave us from her food reviews. And yeah, then I just realized that I got involved with the wrong people. You're never going to open a restaurant and get all your money back of investment in the first year, which is normal. But we were really busy. We had a busy restaurant. It was over 2 floors. Had a great team. Everyone was young, ambitious, hungry. Everyone was putting in a shift. I remember my sous chef, William, at the time, we were both like sleeping in the office because we had so much to do the following day that it just saved going home because it was late nights. And yeah, it was like probably something, opening that restaurant and getting them accolades helped start the foundation of trying to build a name as a representative of being a head chef. But again, the restaurant didn't go right. So for me, it was a massive learning curve. Mm. Into knowing how to run a business and what went wrong, especially. After that, in 2016, 10 months in, I took 3 months out, I wanted to just stop working crazy hours, reanalyze what opportunities I can be having. I got approached by Brett Graham at the Library. Simon Rogan wanted me to work with him at Fira at the time at Claridge's. So yeah, and just analyze what was next. I got opportunity, came through Twitter about Lawson Place Restaurant. The chef there was leaving. they had a star, they lost a star. Is it something that you might want to be a part of? At the time, they were like, we're not looking for a star. If it happens, great. We just want someone who's doing well to give them the opportunity of coming in and trying to cook some good food for our local neighborhood restaurant. I took about a month to decide on what I was doing. And in 2017, I decided, yeah, Lawson Place it is. And I did 8 years there, nearly 8 years.
So, God, was it in the end?
Yeah.
My life.
So yeah, I left last year, October. Literally 31st was my last service, where Claire Bossy came. And yeah, so yeah, I left. Yeah, it was just under 8 years.
Yeah, geez. That shows me that time flies. I'm going to have to crack on with life, I think, because that's quite scary, to be honest. Because in many ways, for me, it just felt like you just arrived and then you left. You know, so it's amazing that that's the length of time that had elapsed. But describe that experience then, because you're from one place to the next, whereby you know you take the lessons of the previous place and then you can apply them into the new place, right? Every place you go to, hopefully you just take a step up in terms of your knowledge. It's a big step to take. It's one thing to go from being a sous chef into a head chef on its own, but then it's another thing to be a sous chef into a head chef and effectively business manager as well. So yeah, I mean, describe that step up. How do you cope with that?
With the Whisper, I didn't really have any experience in knowing the behind the scenes of a business, of how to run with like invoicing and stuff. There were internal people at the Woodford who would take the invoices and kind of do it for me. So my main focus was just the kitchen, which is for me was great, but then clearly not, because it didn't last that long. Going to D&D for me was a bit more of stability, knowing that I'm going to be getting paid monthly as an employee, which is kind of what I wanted, just to start again. But then also, like, I tried to take the ingredients and methods and dishes of what I was doing at the Woodford to Lawson Place. Which, to be fair, it didn't really work, if I'm honest. The neighborhood restaurant were relying on their locals a lot more. So they wanted a bit more comfort food, not too many things on the plate, not too many different flavor combinations. I think the clientele was a lot elderly at the time, which is fine. I get that. But at the same time, like, it was a risk on my part having to adapt and obviously change. But then, yeah, I think with Lawson Place, I felt like I was starting all over again. I had an opportunity to go in as a head chef. A lot of my team from the Woodford came with me, which was amazing. But obviously being part of a group, no one else was left jobless because they just got moved to another restaurant within the group. And then it was kind of like restarting again. We had all the inspections and Michelin and rosettes and this and that. And I think it takes a little while to get to a level of where, you know, it's consistent and you're reliant on your suppliers. I had all new suppliers, so I was building relationships. So the first couple of years were a bit difficult, but it was, again, a really good learning curve. I had some senior members of staff working for me in the kitchen who were like head chefs at Kaufman's. And so it was all a bit different, very overwhelming. And then obviously we went into lockdown, which was a massive
great change.
Yeah, I think no one really knew what was going there.
Yeah.
I think I made the best out of a bad situation, if I'm honest. So I started doing a lot of home cooking. So I'd keep the relationships I had with my suppliers. I'd take the plates and the cutlery from the restaurant and I'll put them all in the back of my car and go and cook for them in homes. I made a hell of a lot amount of money, which I could then afford to support the team, because furlough at the time wasn't enough. Because I know, like, you see how chefs' salaries are built up of like salary and tronc. I know that like Rishi at the time didn't incorporate the tronc system, so if everyone's base salary was really low, that's all they'll get on furlough.
Yeah.
So my way in was trying to support every staff member I had working with me, whether that's just like cash in hand or but that kind of blew. I actually cooked for a lady called Beatrice who worked for the Daily Telegraph. She ended up posting about it and it went viral, and all of a sudden, like, it was ridiculous. It was like I was having a restaurant running from my flat. And it was mad.
Yeah. But it just shows you as well, though, like, the power of doing something that speaks to your heart to do, and, you know, you're doing this thing out of effectively trying to create some goodwill and a gesture towards your team in terms of helping support them. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, when that alignment happens, spectacular things can happen, right? And then you just so happens that you deliver some wondrous plates of food to somebody who can spread that like wildfire.
Yeah.
And then it's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. I think, yeah, it was massive. It helped really well. And it kind of put us in good stead for when we reopened, because I was like trying to keep the name alive, keep a lot of the dishes that I was doing on the menu still like recognizable to people. There was a lot of people that wanted certain things on demand for in their homes, whether that was an anniversary or birthday celebration. And I was making it happen, which was great. And then also, yeah, I think coming out of lockdown, it was all about consistency then. Doing what we love to do to a certain level. I actually got made chef patron coming out of lockdown, which was great. It kind of meant that like I had more of a say with what happened than I originally did, especially like from the business side, because I learned a lot then about behind the scenes of the financials, etc.
Yeah,
and menu development. So yeah, that was really good. And it all, again, Chef Patron, it was a massive talking point for me, for the team. I had a lot of respect for them, but they gave me even more respect, which was good. And yeah, and then obviously I did nearly 3 more years after that to quite a good level, I think. And
yeah, quite a good level. Yeah.
It kind of just, I think when you know that, I love Lawson Place and I'd forever be grateful for what that company did for me coming out of the Woodford restaurant. But obviously moving forward, I know what went wrong. I know what went right. So now my next step, obviously opening 74 Charlotte Street, I kind of know what people want from a guest perspective more. So I kind of get to understand the client of what their needs are, catering for everything, being accessible for everything, whether that's vegan, vegetarian, like, because the allergies right now are ridiculous. Like some might be a trend, some might just be an intolerance, some might just be because they feel like it. So I've learned a lot and I've had to adapt a lot. And yeah, I think that's put me in a good position for what's next.
Yeah, no doubt. With each kind of rung on your ladder so far, it seems like you have taken some monster learning of some kind that's helped you with the next step. And having 8 years at Launceston Place, and especially the last few where, you know, you were chef patron, where you get a bit more of a say at the table in terms of direction and all of that kind of stuff, I can imagine that will serve you immeasurably well moving into this new venture.
Yeah, 100%. I think WSH restaurants they're an incredible group. They're very small, which makes it more personal for me. I like that.
Yeah.
Again, I've been on board like nearly 3 months and like officially, and there's so much I've already learned, and there's so much I feel like I've managed to help and support, whether that comes from a discussion about uniforms or whether that is doing certain things to the service. I don't really want to give too much away because obviously it's part of the element of surprise, but like menu planning and stuff, so, and staffing. So yeah, I think from what I've done my whole career, I feel like this is the ultimate celebration of that to an extent, but with the support of a small group where they believe that this restaurant will be their like London flagship. Obviously Alice's story is the investor of the restaurant, very important person within the industry as itself anyway.
Yeah,
and the fact that he believes in what I'm capable of doing, like, for me, it's just it's amazing.
Yeah. But it, you know, gives you the foundation, right, to build something special and something that clearly speaks to you, and the way that you're igniting around the accessibility element of what you're going to offer. There's obviously some things that you're keeping up your sleeve, which is really exciting to, you know, to want to go and experience whatever that is. Consider me there. But yeah, it is almost like because you're still, I can say this because I know I'm probably a good few years older than you now, you're still a young guy, you've still got a lot ahead of you in terms of what you can do in this industry. But this is kind of like a coming together of everything you've learned so far. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, I think so. Like, to be fair, this restaurant that we're launching, it's an ideal scenario for me based on it's a place that I'd want to go. And I think that's, I'm trying to view it more so from the guest perspective. If I want to go and have lunch within an hour, I can. Especially for Charlotte Street itself, I think that's quite limited with the quality and the level of service that's going to happen, but also how affordable it's going to be. Ideally, I want to be in a position where the guests are leaving and they're booking as they're leaving to come back in the next week or the week after. And I think that's, with an ever changing menu also, it's what's going to entice people and keep it fresh, set trends and just make people happy. That's what I really want to do.
Yeah. You keep drip feeding us little bits of what it's going to be. And there's definitely enough in here to entice, I think. Two more things I just want to cover off before I set you on your merry way, get back to launching your restaurant. National Chef of the Year. Now, you did this whilst at Launceston Place.
Yeah.
First of all, I suppose, why did you want to do it? And then kind of describe the process and what it was like to actually not just take part, but win.
Yeah. So National Chef of the Year for me was incredible based on I won the Young One in 2012. And I think that competition puts you on a platform of being recognized for being a great cook, ultimately. I didn't want to be a competition chef, more so the point of I love doing competitions. I did a hell of a lot, which were worth my while based on the opportunities it gave me. Like I won Spanish Chef of the Year when I was at college, and then it gave me an opportunity to go work at Arzak in San Sebastian, for example. So these sort of things were great, but I didn't want to do so many that I knew how to do that. I wanted to ultimately have the foundation of knowing how to be a chef and run a restaurant, because I remember when I was at Kaufman's doing competitions, they'd be like, oh, you're just a competition chef. And it used to like get to me because I didn't want to fall into that category of just being renowned as a chef, as a competition chef for, yeah, you won gold, world skills, great, cool. And there's a lot of training and investment that go into it that I get, whether that was people hating or maybe a bit of jealousy, I don't really care. But at the same time, National Chef of the Year, for me, it was all about timing. So it was 10 years on from winning Young National Chef. It was the celebration anniversary of the Barclay Hotel where they were doing awards. So that's where I first started cooking. And it was also the anniversary of National Chef of the Year. So for me, it was, is the brief what I want to be doing? Yes, I love the brief. I think the year before was Paul Ainsworth, and it was all about like lockdown food and stuff. And I wasn't really about that. Whereas with Kenny's, for me, I felt it was more about like cooking ingredients that I like to use, venison, sustainable cod, etc. So, and doing a dish with honey on the dessert. So I actually, the competition was for 2 hours long. You had three course menu. I'd put all my dishes on the menu and in a restaurant. I had them on the menu for about 6 weeks. So for me, it was triggered to doing things consistent. Yeah. My whole team knew what I was doing. I was doing it day in, day out. And that's kind of how I went about practicing it. All I knew then is that if the dishes were good enough, the guests, for me, I was always seeing clean plates, which I was. It was like, how am I going to put this into doing a three course meal within 2 hours? So that all I had to focus on ultimately was the timings. Not necessarily practicing the cooking, because I was doing that anyway with my team. So then it was just building a time plan based on certain movements, doing certain things at certain times. I remember when I first started, I had like 7-8 things on the go at once. But by the time an hour went, I was already in a position where I was certain, it's kind of like ready to plate up and then treat it like a service after 15 minutes, start is gone. The next half an hour in, mains is gone, and I've got half an hour to finish. It was literally like triggered.
Right.
And I had like a time plan. I was ticking things off. It was, it kind of went better than I expected, if I'm honest with you.
Well, yeah. I mean, you bloody won.
Yeah. It was good.
But I think the great thing about that is you highlighted earlier on in your journey as well around the importance of practice. And, yeah, you know, the fact that you were not making many mistakes in the restaurant environments that you were in, basically because of the practice that you were putting in, the hard yards, I suppose.
Exactly.
And you know, I hear this over and over again in competitions of any kind, anyone who's ever done it, is that if you don't have some method to practice, then the chances of you being able to adapt in the moment, because your stuff happens in competition, just like a service, you know, that something goes down that you're 100% reliant on, you've got to adapt around it. You're actually doing these things in a live restaurant environment. You're preparing for that as well, right? You're preparing for the unknown quantities.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think the way I treated it as well was how I'd work in the restaurant. So like, if I have a table like this size, and that's all I got to do, all my preparation, my plating up and stuff, then if I've nailed my prep and my time plan within 2 hours to do it on that kind of space, I know I'm going to walk into an environment, I'm going to have that kind of space anyway.
Yeah.
Because already that was tight, let alone getting that space where I can actually spread out a bit more or allocate certain things to certain areas. I think it's how you prepare, firstly, is the most important thing. But then also like the little things that I think judges would have noticed, like when I was doing my butchery prep, I had a different apron on. And then I change the apron for when I come to service, so it's all clean, sharp, and there's no like cross contamination there. So I think thinking out of the box was massive. It was really important. But again, like seasoning was so key as well. It's so easy to forget to add enough salt, or not season enough, or season too much, and you're like, you can't take away, and it's a problem. But yeah, the time plan is, for me, was the most important thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, we've got this year's National Chef of the Year just coming up, right? So there's some interesting things. This will be released before I think people will be actually going into competition. So maybe there's some nice little sneaky lessons to learn before they go into the competition itself. But yeah, superb. The last thing I'd love to talk about, and I suppose maybe this is a byproduct of you taking a little bit of time out between Launceston and this venture that you're moving into now, is that you're now an author.
Yeah, the book.
Yeah, the book. Books, yeah.
Yeah, the books done really well. So I got approached by Away With The Media, Andy, from it was a great guy. He actually approached me about 4 years ago, and I was too busy. I didn't have the time to do it. Lawson Place got into a really good position where we were consistent. My team was so solid that I could actually focus on this as well as run the restaurant. So a lot of the dishes in that book represent what I stand for, what I've learned through my career, dishes that are accessible to be made at home as well, which is important. And yeah, it took 2.5 years to get it to where it is now. And yeah, we sold so many copies, which is great. But again, part of the agreement with Charlotte Street is I can sell the book, so it will be available there. I've also got my name on the door, so that's all very exciting. And yeah, I think it was like the icing on the cake to do like a book launch to help promote, and more so just thank everyone for everyone's support, because I know none of it goes unnoticed. And yeah, I'm truly grateful.
Bless you, man. Bless you. That comes across in everything that you do, in all of the brief discussions that you and I have had over the last few years, the times that we've met. You always come across as grateful for where you are and what you're doing. And I just think that's a really wonderful trait to take yourself forward with. And also, you know, your journey is a masterclass in how to build something for me, just in the sense of, you know, the progression, the adversity, perseverance, the learning that never stops, the connections that you build, you know, and all of these things are all interconnected. They all help each other out along the journey. And now, you know, you've built this opportunity to you'll launch forward, it feels like.
Yeah. Oh, massively. Yeah, like there are times where I need to like pinch myself, like, is this really happening? But then support of like my missus, my family, like, is none of it goes unnoticed. I think that is something I am grateful for, like, and not even just the close family, like Mark Reynolds, huge impact on supporting me by getting me gigs, whether that's at Tottenham or get me the connect, which allowed me then to do Wimbledon, which I loved, and build relationships. I think without these relationships, then it reduces the chance of doing well.
Yeah.
And I think that's, yeah, I just love it. I love cooking. I love being part of the industry. And I feel like if I can be in a position where I can give back to in any sort of way, then I always would.
Top man. Look, that seems to me like a wonderfully positive way to wrap things up.
Cool.
I wish you all the very best with the next few weeks. I'm sure it's going to be a mental phase for you as you ramp it up. But yeah, looking forward to coming and sampling what you've got cooked up for us, and wish you all the very best with the opening and beyond.
That's good. Thanks so much. Appreciate it, Bill.
Thanks very much. Take it easy. Well, that was an absolute blast chatting with Ben. He brought passion, humour and a real sense of fun to this chat. From those lessons in the early kitchens to the excitement of launching 74 Charlotte Street by Ben Murphy, his story is packed with inspiration. I especially loved how he's turned challenges into opportunities along the way, a massive lesson for us all there. So a big thanks to Ben for sharing his journey and his energy. We'll of course be back soon with another brilliant conversation, so until then, look after yourselves, and we'll catch you next time.